to go. Taco to
and a big queue.
Taco to go.
Taco to go. Trip Taco just $2.99. Comes with a big Q, this deal so fine. Brisket breakfast, so much to choose for $2.99. You really can't lose.
Taco to go, taco to.
This deal legit.
Taco to go, taco.
Only at Quick Trip.
Taco to go, taco to go, taco to go.
$2.99.
Thank you, Dave. 9:09 as we head into the 9 o'clock hour. And sometimes we have thoughts here, and it leads to something else. And President Trump, a while back, a couple of weeks ago, talked about putting tariffs on foreign films, and he talked about propaganda. And that got me to thinking about, well, when it comes to advertising, when it comes to movies or whatever, how do we know if we're not being manipulated, or if there are things subliminally in movies or in commercials or whatever to make us do this, like the old thing about, you know, a clip of a bag of popcorn in a movie where you don't even see it go by. Laura Crosswell joins us now, director of the Center for Advanced Media Studies and an associate professor of health communication at the University of Nevada, Reno, who got her PhD from... Professor?
LSU.
Go Tigers!
Go Tigers!
There you go. So that did get me, that's how we got, I just want to tell the listeners, that's how we got from there to here, because the president did make a point with me where it's like, well, I don't know, how do you know unless you watch everything frame by frame? Let's talk about subliminal messaging, because for people maybe don't even know what that is. Explain it to us, please.
Sure. So subliminal messaging refers to messages that are really designed to pass below what we would call the threshold of conscious perception. So this could be words, images, or even sounds that are presented so quickly that we might not be able to verbalize that we've saw them or heard them, but our brain is still picking up on them at a subconscious level.
So how would you know they're there unless you watch everything frame by frame?
Well, so that's the thing. They're really below that threshold, and they flash so quickly. It's just for about a millisecond, mm-hmm. so fast that it's really hard to notice. There was an example decades ago where they flashed popcorn on the screen really quickly. But after the fact, the person who did it actually admitted that he faked the results. So the research on the effectiveness is actually mixed on this. It would be hard to tell if we saw it or not.
So do we know if it works or not?
Well, the research is mixed. So some studies suggest that it can nudge people slightly, but it has to be under very specific conditions. So, for example, if we were dehydrated and somebody flashed the word thirsty, we might, you know, choose a drink over a snack. Mm-hmm. But if we aren't already in that, you know, that condition of being thirsty, the message isn't going to have much of an effect. So it could nudge us if we're already leaning in that direction.
There's not been any research on this at all? You would think the CIA or somebody would have looked into this, right?
Oh, there's certainly been research, but it's just mixed. You know, there's not an overwhelming amount of research that says this has a powerful effect on us. In fact, it's the exact opposite. It's really kind of, if it does work, it's really just more of a gentle nudge in that direction.
And I'm not trying to ask you to prove a negative or disprove whatever it is, however you say it, but do we know really or not if there's any of this going on in advertising and marketing and movies and what have you? News shows?
Well, the funny thing is, you know, advertisers kind of don't need to use subliminal messaging because they have strategies and tactics that help convince us what to buy that are just cleverly right out in the open. So
doesn't have to be that sophisticated.
Right, exactly.
But what about, I mean, like news programs or, you know, the country's so divided when it comes politically, maybe it wouldn't take much to nudge somebody one way or the other. Or again, maybe because your choices are so clear when it comes to news program, they don't need news programs. They don't need subliminal messages. They're pretty much out front about it, right?
Right. And, you know, today's consumer is a lot more, I think, informed and sophisticated. So the strategy is really to be more transparent than use tactics like subliminal messaging. Decades ago, it was used in a political ad. The words rats flashed. Mm-hmm. But people did notice, and it kind of caused trouble for that campaign.
What campaign was that?
That was Gore and Bush.
Okay. Who called who a rat?
I believe, and I would have to do more research.
Don't even answer the question. Don't even answer the question. If I don't want to get you involved with this. Let's talk about when it comes to advertising. You know, because we watch programs like Mad Men and, you know, Don Draper comes up with this idea or that idea. But today it's a lot more scientific than that, Professor, when it comes to motivating us, the consumer, and advertising.
Well, certainly we have a lot more data to work with, given social media platforms and the Internet. We have so much data that advertisers can target us very personally.
So, like, how is it different today than, say, and how scientific is it? Maybe that's a question I should ask, because you're talking about huge budgets here. You're talking about a lot of money, and I don't know that anything is done now on a gut feel, is it? I mean, everything's tested and tested through the roof, or not really?
It's certainly tested more, and, you know, back during the time of Mad Men, that was really based on the sex and the sizzle of the message and those emotional appeals. And today it's really more about interactions with the consumer. So it's more of a conversation, and it is more data-based because we have that information about, you know, exactly what you watch, what you listen to, who you admire, things like that. So there are algorithms in place now, and there are ways to reach individuals more personally.
How do advertisers tailor their message as it relates to, and you're talking about algorithms, as it relates to age or political affiliation or so forth, like, for example, or does it depend on product? Can you advertise a soft drink or soda to everybody regardless of affiliation, or do you target one soda to one political affiliation? How does that work?
So in the past, it would just kind of be this one mass message that would be sent out to everybody. Mm-hmm. And I suppose you could do that today, but that wouldn't be nearly as effective. And especially given all the information that people have at their fingertips, specifically advertisers. So, for instance, if you're driving by Starbucks today, they can use geographical data to send you an ad or a coupon right at that time that you're kind of driving past that location. They can certainly, I mean, depending on what social media platforms you're on, they can target it using your name, things like that. So it's certainly more directed specifically towards you.
And the platform has a lot to do with it too, because we run a commercial here for some stomach troubles that I don't want to go into that I don't particularly like hearing. But when it comes to medicines, I guess, TV, it seems as though sometimes you'll watch the video and you wonder, what in the hell does this have to do with what they're selling, the medicine or the health problem that these people are having, right?
100%. And that's very strategic because they want to sell the experience, not the, you know, ingredients or the utility of that medication. So, for instance, diaper ads, they're just not going to talk about the absorbency of the diaper. They're going to show a happy baby with happy parents because emotion drives those memories and decisions that consumers make.
Do we make decisions primarily on emotion, or does that change as we age?
Emotion definitely helps sell. And, you know, in the moment of purchasing decision, we often, you know, it takes energy to think and make informed purchasing decisions. So advertisers like to use these shortcuts that really lean on emotional appeal so that when we're in the store, we just go for a particular laundry detergent brand rather than, you know, thinking about which is cheaper or which is more effective. We just saw the ad, we know what it was, and we grab that product.
So when it comes to brand loyalty and ages and who it is, what demographic that advertisers are seeking, does it vary by brand? Or do some people, like when it comes to beer, for obviously a younger person is not going to have any interest in Depends, you would think. But really, Professor, those kind of things. But when it comes to a product that, say, everybody would use, maybe beer, are there specific demos that companies go after, age demographics or gender demographics, or Is it at some point do people decide, you know what, I'm just going for the price, or I'm brand loyal already?
Yeah, they definitely work with market segmentation. You know, they want to know, and they do a lot of research that informs those decisions of how they're going to use specific appeals to reach certain segments. But again, because they have so much data on all of us, once they segment that audience, they really then start customizing those ads to that specific target member in within that segment, if that makes sense.
It does. Let me take a break. We come back, we'll continue our conversation. Laura Croswell, director of the Center for Advanced Media Studies and an associate professor of health communication at the University of Nevada, Reno, got her PhD from LSU. Laura, I worked in Las Vegas for a while, and I'm from New Orleans originally. So we come back, before we get back to the subject matter, I want to ask you your differences between Nevada and Louisiana, all right? Because I have some of my own that I noticed.
Okay.
All right. And if you have any questions about advertising or subliminal messages, et cetera, 504-260-1870. When we come back, somebody wants to know about, do some emotions work better than others? Love, anger, fear, fear of missing out, et cetera. And we'll also talk about the role of colors when it comes to advertising, and how sometimes you're being motivated to do something and maybe you wind up buying stuff that you don't even realize. I'll tell a story of myself when we come back, as a matter of fact. 920 traffic and more. Well, not traffic. 920, we'll take a break. Tommy Tucker, WWL. We're talking to Laura Croswell, director of the Center for Advanced Media Studies and an associate professor of health communication at the University of Nevada, Reno. President Trump talked about tariffs on foreign movies. Then he talked about propaganda and subliminal messaging, which got me to thinking, well, how do you know what's in it, what's not? That led us to Laura Croswell, who we found out, in addition to being an associate professor of health communication at the University of Nevada, Reno, got her PhD from LSU. And I asked you before we went to the break, Laura, compare and contrast Nevada to Louisiana, because I worked in Las Vegas for a while and I got my own comparisons. Give me yours.
Sure. Well, they both, I absolutely loved living in both places, and I really miss Louisiana. Mm-hmm. An obvious difference would be the humidity. It's very dry here. That wasn't the case when I was at LSU. Mm-hmm. And I do really miss the food that I was accustomed to in Baton Rouge. That is, you know, you don't get food anywhere else in the U.S. like you do in Louisiana.
Totally agree. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say those are the two right off the top of my head that
the other
I can
thing,
think of.
The thing I found in terms of lifestyle with the, you know, with the gambling and the drinking, a lot of similarities there. But one big difference is that here people tend to stay there. At that time, Las Vegas was printing 2 or 3 phone books a year because so many people were coming in and going out. I don't even know if they print phone books anymore. I doubt that. Let's talk about advertising and colors and some ways that advertisers might appeal to us where we don't know what they're trying to do, and do specific colors lend themselves more to specific products or specific audiences?
Sure. So colors and emotions, the emotions advertisers try to target, have a huge influence over our purchasing decisions in ways that we don't even realize. So for instance, blue tries to create, or, you know, researchers suggest it creates a really calming and trustworthy effect. Also, cigarette packaging uses the color blue to suggest a lighter type of tobacco. Green is often associated with health. So if you think whole foods, you often associate green with organic or eco-friendly. Black signals luxury and sophistication. So each color has its own associations that create a subtle suggestion in the consumer's mind.
I was looking, I like to put YouTube on while I work out, and I was putting on some commercials from back in the day just to, you know, to get a reference point and so forth. And I was watching the way they marketed cars in the 70s as opposed to now, and I was trying to highlight some differences. One thing I did notice was that in the 70s, they would talk about price points.
Taco just $2.99. Comes with a big Q, this deal's so fine. Brisket breakfast, so much to choose for $2.99. You really can't lose.
Taco, taco, taco to go.
Taco Tuesday. This deal legit. Taco Tuesday. Only at Quick Trip. Taco to go, taco to go, taco to go, $2.99.
I mean, starting at, you know, I think the commercials would say $1,400 or $1,500 or as low as $4,000. Now, I saw a commercial the other day for some type of off-road vehicle, whatever it was. It wasn't anything elaborate, but it said starting at $57,000. Have automakers started to get away from price point and now go toward other things to get people to buy cars? Or how has that changed when it comes to marketing new cars for the public?
Sure. So car ads are pretty interesting. In the past, it used to be highlighting everything about the car. You know, it's fast, it's safe, it has a lot of space, and they would try to just really suggest that it does everything, right? And today, they really want to highlight the one thing that makes it stand out. So if it's safety they want to sell, they really focus on that in the ads. If it's the fact that it's environmentally friendly, they're going to focus on that point and try not to be everything to the consumer, because when you try to be everything, nothing really stands out. And in terms of prices, I expect that they stray from that because they want to get you in the door so that then they can, you know, rope you into this deal.
When it comes to food, I struggled with my weight for a while. I'm on this weight loss drug now, lost 100 pounds, so I got that under control. It controls my appetite. I do firmly believe that after watching the documentary Fed Up, my mind is just not wired right like most people are, and I got a proclivity to sweets like some people would have to alcohol or what have you. But, man, if you've ever tried to diet, and you look at the commercials that are on TV for food, what is it? What are they trying to do when it comes to is it about hunger? Is it about making you feel some kind of sensation when you eat? What are they doing there, doctor? I'm just curious.
So they're really playing on, if we think about basic human needs, so there's a hierarchy that says, you know, physiological needs is our most basic need. And fast food companies are really going to play on that. So what we're going to see is the times that we're most hungry, we're going to see more fast food ads. And fast food companies certainly use colors to drive, you know, interest in purchasing decisions, as well as the design of their establishment itself. So it's purposely uncomfortable because they want you to get in, get your food, get out. They want high turnover. So even
Say that part again.
So fast food stores or companies will make their environment intentionally uncomfortable because they want customers to get in, eat their food, and get out. They want high turnover, as opposed to a place like Starbucks that kind of creates a more comfortable environment because they want you to sit a little. They provide free internet. They want you to get refills. So it's all about the kind of the intentions of what they are selling, and then they shape the design accordingly. So IKEA is an interesting example we use in my class. It has an intentionally kind of confusing store design, and it directs you. You know, it even comes with a map, and it's hard to get out of. I've never actually been to an IKEA, but it's hard to get out of or stray from the directions that they tell you to go, and that's intentional.
Do you find yourself, and is your life's work, do you find yourself sometimes being motivated by advertising and you have to stop and say, wait a minute, hang on here?
Oh, all the time.
Like what? Give an example.
Well, I think I had to get off TikTok because it was so easy to make purchases that I was just getting all of this junk that I didn't need. And, you know, social media platforms, oftentimes I'll see ads that really play on the idea of scarcity or these deals like, oh, we're going out of business, one-time deal, it's 50% off. And it's just so easy to click a button and make that purchase. Or the idea of, you know, the social bandwagon, everybody is getting the, what are those big water bottles called? Stanley. Yeah. Stanley for a while was the thing. And so oftentimes ads will play on that. There's just so many different strategies that advertisers use, and The more you study it, I think the more interesting it becomes because so much psychology goes into it.
Yeah, so when it comes to emotions, fear of missing out, love, anger, fear, and even politics, has that become part of it now where you kind of rolling the dice if you want somebody, if you want to sell a product that makes an environmental statement, then you're kind of alienating the people that don't want to admit that the climate's changing or don't accept that argument?
Yeah, that's certainly something that advertisers, I'm sure, have to navigate. But again, it goes back to, I mean, you mentioned it earlier, consumer segments. Mm-hmm. So I think they already know really where their consumers lie in terms of politics. And I think they probably already have kind of leaned into what their consumer segments likes and supports. And they really target those individuals within that segment.
You know, I said I was going to tell a story on myself earlier, and I will. I'm a little bitty fella, okay? And I wear a 28 inseam pants. I'm a small guy. And suddenly they've started to sell pants with a 28 inseam. And these things pop up on the internet, on Facebook and everything else. And Professor, I got a closet full of pants. I got pants I'll never wear, but I can't stop ordering them because they come in a 28 inseam and I don't have to have them altered. What's going on in my mind there? Do you have any idea?
Well, if something works for you and so you're saying you buy a lot of pants?
I guess, yeah, apparently. It's like 28 inseam. Sure, let's get some. How many pair of khaki pants do I need?
That could be the fear of missing out. You know, you found something you like and you don't want to not have that anymore, so you keep buying it. I used to buy purses like it was my job. So I don't know. That might just play into what you like and your personal preferences.
So when it comes to colors, I want to get back to this because I thought a long time ago about just vending machines. And I thought about the Penn State football team. You're a football fan? If you went to LSU, you might be.
Nope, I'm not so much of a football fan. I do like tailgating, but I grew up in Pennsylvania, so I'm very familiar with Penn
about
State.
The Penn State uniforms, right? The generic football uniforms, the blue and white. And I thought that if packages were in a vending machine were just black and white and they had no colors, or as you walk down the supermarket aisles, the chips and the sodas and this and that and the other thing weren't all the vibrant colors that they were, that they were just black and white, that sales would plummet and people wouldn't buy the stuff. Is there any indication that I'm right there or not?
Oh, 100%. That's, if we think about fragrances, like perfumes or colognes, if you went into a store and they were all just in opaque white containers, it would be very difficult for that brand to attract sales because it's the design of the bottle that sells. So it's the design of the packaging plays a huge role in our purchasing decisions in so many different ways.
And before we let you go, when it comes to people making a political statement, voting with their dollars, so to speak, you talk about DEI initiatives. I see a story at Yahoo Finance here, Costco thriving after retailers like Target roll back DEI initiatives. Do people let their politics dictate their wallet? Is it all about price? Because I'm just wondering about when it comes to competing for the consumer dollar, you got an economy that people are running up credit card debt. They don't have a lot of disposable cash, but yet they get motivated by the things that they want and maybe buy more car than they really can afford because, well, let me get to that real quick. What is it that would make an otherwise rational person go out and buy a $75,000 vehicle when they can't afford it?
Well, I think it's just how we kind of get into that circle of debt, because if we're feeling bad, we're feeling sad, we, purchase something and that makes us feel better for a brief moment. And then we get the credit card bill and then we're sad again. And so and we see it in the media, right? We see people living these luxurious lives and it's that, it looks just so nice to have that. And so we make that purchase and then realize, ooh, that wasn't a good idea. So it's kind of a cycle that we can't get out of sometimes.
So it's about happiness, ultimately?
I think, emotions, like I said, play a huge role in it. If we're feeling bad, we don't like to feel bad. And so some things that we do to correct that is either binge TV, we can eat, we can shop. It's just those things that we immediately think of that will help us in that moment.
You want to be thankful for something, be thankful I'm not in your class because I would be just driving you crazy. Thank you, Professor Laura Crosswell. I appreciate your time.
Oh, this was great. Thank you so much.
You bet. Director of the Center for Advanced Media Studies and an Associate Professor of Health Communication at the University of Nevada, Reno. What would make an otherwise rational person want to redesign Jefferson Parish recreational facilities and cause a maelstrom of problems for herself? But
Taco to go, taco to, and a big queue. Taco to go, taco to go. Quick Trip Taco, just $2.99. Comes with a big queue, this deal so fine. Brisket breakfast, so much to choose. For $2.99, you really can't lose. Taco to go, taco to, this deal legit. Taco to go, taco, only at Quick Trip. Taco to go, taco to go, taco to go, $2.99.
But yet, have it turn out well. That's what Cynthia Lee Sheng did. We'll talk to her when we come back. 938 Traffic Now, WWL. 9:45, quarter till 10. Sometimes people tell you things and they resonate with you and you can remember exactly where you were. Charlie Melanson told me in person, I can remember exactly where I was. And he said, you know, there's different kinds of politicians. Some of them see which way, some of them are true leaders and others see which way the crowd is headed, then jump in front and call themselves a leader. Well, the person, Cynthia Lee Sheng, that's about to come on is the person that is not the latter. She's the one that truly has a vision for things and decides to lead people that way. Sometimes it's not very well received at the beginning, but after it's over, people change their mind, right? And that's what happened with Jefferson Parish Recreation Reimagined. And look, you took a lot of heat, but nobody's complaining now with the pickleball courts, are they, Cynthia Lee Sheng?
No, thank you. Thank you for remembering all that, Tommy.
That's true.
It's been a couple years. It's true. It takes some time to build it up and see our vision. And I think the pickleball courts is exactly the vision that we saw for Recreation Reimagined.
What is
thank
it that,
you for
that,
remembering.
Well, tell me what it is. I'm a fan of yours. You know that. Tell me what it is that that made you realize pickleball was the way to go. I'm curious about this.
It was not me. It was my team. It was when Recreation Reimagined was being discussed back in 2021.
Something else that makes you a great
leader.
They
knew the trend.
Something else that makes you a great leader. You always give credit to your team. I got to point that out.
No, it was all our team. I didn't even know pickleball. I don't think I heard about it then. It was a funny sounding name of a sport. Mm-hmm. And I remember going out to the community group saying, you know, we want places for pickleball, and I would almost get booed. But I think our recreation team knew what was going on around the country.
You did get booed.
Yeah, I definitely got booed. But I think our recreation team saw the trends going around the country and said, this is a fast, growing sport. It really is. The growth in this sport has been tremendous. And because of their vision, back in 2021, now, right when it's really getting hot, especially in this area, we're delivering, a beautiful 9-court outdoor complex with the cover. Councilman Bonanno's district, he funded us for the cover, so we can play in the shade. And I only picked up the sport about a year and a half ago, and I'm an addict, you know that, so yeah. I've told you that. So, and it really is exciting, and it's what we've done at that facility is more than just bring the infrastructure there. The way we've set it up, and when I traveled to Houston, I've traveled to Miami, I've looked at how things are done. Everywhere I've traveled in the past year, I've taken the time to go play pickleball to see how it's set up. And we are doing, we bring the community together. So there's something different going on at this court. It's because it's about the people, and we're bringing the community together. And this sport has such incredible growth because you play with people that you've never met before. I mean, of course, you can go get a rental and you can just play with your three friends, but really it's this open play way of how we play the sport that makes a community about it. And I wanted our place to recognize that and play that way.
Well,
and so
second.
You just can come by yourself and get a game with other people.
Let me make a note here. Ask Jordan, the book psychiatrist, about why pickleball becomes a cult. Okay, I just want to make that note to myself.
It's a cult.
Let's talk
it
about
really
the
is.
Where is the facility? Tell me about the facility. Where is it, and how do people go about playing and all that stuff?
Yeah, the facility is at our Mike Miley Playground, but it's in the back. You go down David Drive and you turn down Saints drive near Airline, and you will get to the sort of the back of the Mike Miley complex. Mm-hmm. And it's near, very close to our Rio Lario Special Needs Center. So if people are familiar with that site, and it's covered courts, you park on Eisenhower. And look, I mean, when if you go in the day and there's not a lot of courts being used, you can just go on a court and play like you would a tennis court. You and your friends can just go there. You can drill. But once it gets crowded and when something special happens, drill, like, you know, do your practices. And then, but once it gets crowded, something special happens, and we go to this, what we call a bucket system, mm-hmm. where you form a queue, and you just put your paddle, and then we've added another aspect, which is really popular with our players. I think we're the first in the area to do it. You put your paddle in a bucket that's based on your skill level. So are you a beginner, you're just starting, are you an intermediate player, are you high intermediate, or are you advanced? And that gets everybody the game that they want. That gets everybody the fun game. It's always more fun to play with people at your skill level. And so it's kind of a chronological cue, but it's kind of a cue based on skill level. It's a bucket. Mm-hmm. And once you get four people in your bucket and a court's available, you go play with maybe three people you've never met before, and you become fast friends. That's the beauty of this sport. It's why I think all of us, I think it is why it's a cult, because it brings about your friend groups and a social network. And, you know, I started playing at the Exchange in New Orleans, and I quickly made some of my best friends in the world at that facility. So I think that's why everybody's so in love with the sport.
Ask and then, psychiatrist.
And then, Tommy.
Hang on a second. Ask psychiatrist why drill is part of the cult. Okay, go ahead.
And then we have, I saw it in Miami, we have a challenge court, which is the center court, court number 5. Mm-hmm. Normally, the other courts, you have 4 players come on and 4 players off, and it goes kind of quickly, 15-minute games. But the challenge court, we have the winner stays. And it's the winning team gets to stay. If they can stay as long as they can, some teams that are really good, they get tired and they have to kind of concede the court. But I think that brings us the best games. It's right in the center, so anybody can challenge, but it tends to be a very advanced game. And so while the rest of us are waiting for our games, we're watching incredible pickleball right in the middle of the complex, and that lends to that community atmosphere, and it lends to us watching a better game and understanding what we have to work on in our own game. It's a lot of fun. It really is a lot of fun. So
how can this expand in the parish, maybe to the West Bank? Or wait, it's on the East Bank now. What about the West Bank?
We have facilities all over. This is our first truly dedicated pickleball complex. But really, the success of this just within the last week has gotten everybody saying, where's the next one going to be? Mm-hmm. I would love it if, you know, our growth in Jefferson Parish with our economy is sports tourism. So I'm always thinking, if we're going to do a sports facility, let's go big so we can get a regional tournament or a national tournament. And now they get to visit the great city of New Orleans and all their tourism. They get to stay in our hotels. They get to spend money at our restaurants, go to our shopping malls. So that's, I always want to build so we can land a national tournament or a regional tournament. So we'll see. We'll discuss it, but we certainly want more. We play pickleball all around the parish, but we play it kind of on tennis courts, or we play it inside in gyms. But, yeah, I think the conversation is that, you know, there's a lot of growth in this sport, and we want to offer this as a service to our folks. And, look, we want our pickleball businesses to do well, too. So I tell our business owners, I know them all, like, I'm making new players for us to grow the whole pie. You know, I see our facility is really bringing new players into fold because it's free play. Mm-hmm. And then, sure enough, you know, we have Pickleplex that just opened in Jefferson Parish. We're about to get a Pickler, which is a national pickleball club. We're going to get our first one in Elmwood. So we're really seeing, you know, real expansion in this sport right now.
I'm going to have some people go over there and pick you up and deprogram you.
Oh,
no, I'm just teasing. I'm glad you enjoyed
it. There's a lot of people like me, Tommy.
No, I know.
Everybody knows somebody who's crazy about pickleball.
I'm kidding. But look, everybody I know, look, I've had people I've worked with. Once you get on this, man, I'm telling you, it hooks you. And I just think that you're to be commended for looking ahead years in the future, as you did, reimagining this. Nothing just happens, whether it's chairs at a PTA meeting or pickleball courts. Kudos to you for doing this, and I presume there are plans to expand it throughout the parish. Yes.
Yes, okay. We definitely. But come on out. If you've never played before, come on out. We have ambassadors who will help you learn the sport. We want this to be open to everyone. This is about a community and making new players.
Who's
so
the best pickleballer?
Stop thinking about it and come on out.
Who's the best pickleballer in Jefferson Parish government?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure about
maybe
that.
You?
I'm not going to.
Maybe you.
I don't know. But let me tell you, we have some kids that are going to play that are going to make it national. I know it. And they're all the time. They're about 14 and 15 years old. I'm talking about Christian and Austin. We have some kids that I am looking forward to watching on the national stage. And hopefully we'll have a lot of fan base here for them.
Thank you. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Go play pickleball. Goodbye. Cynthia Lee Shang, Parish President. We'll find out what Newell's got planned for us when we come back on WWL.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.